Everyone, I'd like to welcome you to our presentation. This is the interaction of processes and its importance to a successful audit. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS program manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. A couple of notes for everyone. All of you are on mute, but we absolutely want to address your questions. So please utilize the question portion of the dashboard. We will address questions at the end of the presentation. One of the more common questions that we get is whether or not the presentation will be made available after we're finished. We do make our presentations available in two ways. Firstly, if you'd like to have copies of the slides, they will be available for download from our website shortly after we're finished. And if you'd like to rewatch this webinar with the voiceover, we do post all of our webinars to our YouTube page, and you can find the link for that again, on our website. Just look for previously recorded webinars. Our topics for today, we're going to be going over the background of this requirement and kind of unpack why it's such a big deal in the context of an audit. We're going to go over where these requirements are rooted in the ISO 9001 standard. We're going to explore a bit of what is and what is not a process. We'll talk about strategies for meeting the requirement with minimal changes to your existing documentation. And we're going to go over the impact of outsourced processes. This is actually a new section in this presentation. We'll have a couple concluding remarks and then your questions. Now, way back in 2014, we were given a mandate from the accreditation bodies, folks like ANAB, UCAS, et cetera. We were told that we needed to start taking a harder line on our assessments of client interaction of process or IOP documents. And this was rooted primarily in a clause from ISO 17021. And that clause states the following. PJR is required to develop what's called an audit program for the full certification cycle. And it needs to identify the audit activities that are going to be required to demonstrate that the client's management system fulfills the requirements for certification. Now, it's that verbiage, the client's management system, that is so prescient here, so pertinent here. We are expected to make sure that our auditors are documenting their audits in such a way that they reflect your management system. So where that gets difficult is we're required to adhere to the interaction of processes that you've developed and only to your interaction of processes. That's what you've told us is your quality management system. It's made up of processes after all. So if your IOP doesn't do an effective job of identifying the processes, then our job in performing the audit gets to be very difficult. So we've instructed our auditors to write nonconformances in situations where the IOP does not identify the processes in an appropriate or effective manner. Now, this is rooted in several requirements from ISO 9001. In 441, in the opening paragraph, it states that you need to determine the processes needed for the quality management system. Again, we need to recognize that a quality management system is made up of processes. Secondly, in subclause B, it states that you need to determine the sequence and interaction of those processes. And finally, you need to maintain documented information to support the operation of the processes. That's where the IOP requirement is rooted. Now, in terms of what is a process, we can refer to the definition that's provided in ISO 9000. This is, of course, the fundamentals and vocabulary document. And therein, it identifies process as a set of interrelated or interacting activities that use inputs to deliver an intended result. Now, the key aspect of this is that phrase, interrelated or interacting activities. This means that a process is not a single step. It's a series of activities that are focused on a shared goal. And that's a very key distinction. I'll be pointing that out again in a few slides here. In terms of designations that represent acceptable names for processes, these are some of the more common ones that we've seen. Sales, purchasing, production, and so forth. Now understand, recognize that it is ultimately up to you to christen your processes. It's up to you to say, okay, these are the processes that make up our quality management system. Now our auditors are going to verify that what they're seeing is squaring with what you're telling us, but it is your right to name your processes. We do recognize that. So if you think that your system is made up of a very short list of processes, well, fine. We will endeavor to work with that as long as it matches up with what we are seeing in practice. Now, in terms of what is not a process, there's less of this than there used to be. But one of the issues that we were facing, particularly back in 2014, when this effort was first deployed, were IOP documents that presented steps and said, well, these are processes. So for example, to have something like create a work order and tell us that's a process, or complete the work order and tell us that's a whole separate process. Now, in this list that I've given here on the screen, it's conceivable that these are steps of a single process, but they are most likely not processes by themselves. So that's a real common example of what we see when we have an issue with the IOP. We've also had issues, and unfortunately, this still persists to this day where we see this, where the organization is giving sections from the applicable standard and saying, well, those are our processes. So for example, do you really have a process that you call resource management? No, that's a section within ISO 9001. That's probably not the true name of your process. So an interaction of process document that's presenting these types of issues most likely should be written up with a nonconformance during the audit process. So if you've been working on your IOP, and obviously we realize a lot of work goes into the IOP, maybe you're coming to us from another certification body where this wasn't quite as pronounced an issue as it is for PJR. So you want to try to hang on to what you've already created. We recognize there's some ways you can do this and retain the core of the work that you did. So I want to walk you guys through an example of how that might work. What we're going to do, we're going to take an IOP and we're going to apply two improvements to it. And we're going to start by reviewing the raw IOP itself. Now, please note this example is not reflective of any particular PJR client, and it was created solely for the purpose of this presentation. So here's our raw IOP. So as you can see here, we have a grand total of 12 boxes and two decision diamonds. And you know, in the old days, we might have looked at this and said, oh, there's 12 processes here. But if you dig a little deeper, you say to yourself, okay, is something like order entered into mainframe system, is that really a standalone process? Is that really a set of interrelated or interacting activities for transforming an input into an output? Again, referencing back to the official definition of process as given in ISO 9000. So let's do our first improvement to this IOP. Let's identify what the support processes are. Now, support processes is a common idea. It's a common item that's applied. Now, you don't have to have key processes and support, but again, recognize that your IOP has to cover the entire quality management system. It can't just be sales, purchasing, production. It's got to be the entire quality management system. Again, the standard mandates that the quality management system is made up of processes. We do need them all. So in our model here, on the lower right-hand portion of the screen, we've added a support process box. And we've identified this, that this is not tied into a particular process, but rather it serves as support for all processes. That's kind of the idea behind these disconnected arrows here. So this is our first improvement, is identifying the support processes and therefore reflecting the entire quality management system. Secondly, we're going to create an IOP key. Now, this is a very popular strategy. We've seen this for companies, again, where they want to keep the IOP as is, but they need to identify what their processes are in a more effective manner. Now, this can be done with numbering, with alpha characters. For our test model here, we're going to do this with colors. Okay, so now in the lower left-hand side of the screen, we have identified six processes. So again, if you remember, we started with 12 boxes, two decision diamonds. We added a 13th box to this. And from these 15 items, we have six processes in total, as you can see. So we've got sales order entry in orange, production in yellow, and so forth. So by these two small adjustments, we've kept the IOP just the way it was before, but now we know what the processes are and it reflects the entirety of the quality management system. This is an IOP that will absolutely pass audit assessment. Now, there's more than one way to go about doing this. And there's a variety of approaches that you can take. So we're going to share with you over the next couple of slides some additional examples. If you're going to be developing your IOP or perhaps you're looking to change it, each of these is from a current or former PJR client, and permission was granted in all cases for us to use these examples. So here's our first one. This is a kind of a top-down flow here. Again, you'll note these are definitely high-level processes. And as you can see on the left, there is an acknowledgement of the support activities. These are also numbered just for ease of report preparation. Here's an interesting IOP. The first thing that I want you to notice is the unique nature of the process names. These are not direct quotes from the ISO 9001 standard overhaul. That's very clearly a unique process. Inventory management, so forth. Off on the left, we have this management related process, which it's been identified that this impacts all six of the other processes, hence the kind of the spider effect of these arrows pointing in these different directions here. This particular type of IOP is typically referred to as swim lane. So if we look at this kind of carefully, we identify that this organization has three core processes: sales, purchasing, production. And it's interesting to note from looking at this that these processes start kind of independent of each other. There's in the sales process, for example, we have order received from customer. And in the purchasing process, a review of available inventory. And those two things are flagged as being independent activities. But these two processes do kind of meet in the middle. There's a review of purchased items, a receiving of purchased items, and then that feeds into the sales process to issue the work orders. And then both processes, of course, flow down to the production process. Then obviously on the bottom row here, the last lane, we have the support processes that support the system at large. Here's another interesting model. We have, in this case, again, I want to highlight the unique nature of these process names. We have service exchange, distribution, repair, return. And what this organization has done is they've indicated, we have core processes that are highlighted in yellow, and anything that isn't highlighted is support. So in this instance, we have five core processes and support processes. So this is also an acceptable way of flagging your processes and organizing them. So let's turn our attention to kind of the new layer here, and that is outsourced processes. Now, this was something that was recently brought out in an accreditation body assessment that was done here at Perry Johnson. There are many organizations that outsource a few, and there's a couple that outsource several of their processes to external providers. Now, the term external provider is defined as a provider that is not part of the organization. That's an official definition. That's a very inclusive term, and that's going to refer to subcontractors, partner companies, parent companies, and so forth. Now, we actually have a whole separate webinar that talks about outsourcing entitled Non-Applicable Clauses, Permissible Exclusions, Exemptions. There are several recordings of this webinar available on our website if you've not seen it before. So what are some examples of outsourced processes, things that the organization might not be doing in their building? We might think about calibration. This is a very common one. Not every organization can do their own calibration, so they have to bring in an outside provider. It's very common also for some design activities to be outsourced, whether to a parent company or sometimes even to a professional design company. Sometimes it's necessary to outsource manufacturing or aspects of manufacturing. Sometimes a metal parts manufacturer will need to outsource things like heat treating or plating or shot blasting, or things of this nature. So there's lots of possibilities. So why are we talking about this? How does this factor into the IOP document? Well, again, let's revisit some of the applicable requirements from ISO 9001. In 441, it states that you need to determine the processes that make up your quality management system. In 841, it requires you to control any outsourced process. So we recognize that your processes include processes that are outsourced. In 442, again, it requires documented information supporting the operation of your processes. So what this means is we need to see that your interaction of process document identifies what is outsourced, either directly on the IOP itself or in something that can be directly tied back to the IOP. So here are some examples of how you might do that. You might have a special font for items that are outsourced. You might identify them with bold underlined text, like I've done here. You might choose to give the outsourced process their own special place on the IOP. Whatever approach you take is up to you. But again, you need to identify what are the outsourced processes, either on the IOP itself or something that ties back to it. In conclusion, we absolutely want to provide you with a value-added audit while still meeting all applicable requirements. We do hope that you will use the points of this presentation to develop an even better understanding of what your processes are. I do want to invite you to join us for one of our other webinars. We have a presentation on ISO 9001, Knowing What to Expect to Ensure a Stress-Free Audit. It is presented on a semi-annual basis. It goes over some of the more common issues in ISO 9001 audits and what is expected in those areas. We also have our non-applicable clauses, exclusions, exemptions presentation that I mentioned earlier. That one is also semi-annual. We have a wide variety of other webinars on Stage 1 auditing, AS 9100, IATF 16949, and so forth. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way for you to do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address in the provided space, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for updates on changes to the standard, changes to PGR requirements, and other points of interest. I do thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard if anyone has any questions today. Okay, thank you very much. Have a great day.